Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It makes things easier to have someone do every step of the way, you know, just kind of pattern yourself after that.
Has a fairly decent future in baseball.
Yeah, I think I told a few of you guys this, but I look at him as the Babe Ruth of our generation, so he's gonna be okay.
So that is future Chicago White Sox pitching ace Michael Kopech anointing Eloy Jimenez as the next Babe Ruth.
No pressure.
Yeah. You know, Anthony, there was a time when you had to have a major league at bat before you could be the next Babe Ruth, you know? But hey, Michael Kopech doesn't have that many innings either. I give the kid credit. I think it's great. They were having fun, and I'm just having fun. I'm not picking on him at all. Good morning, Chicago. I am Hub Arkish, Anthony Heron alongside. We're going to be with you for the next 3 hours. And, you know, Anthony, I know I've really been looking forward to this, and we're going to have a good time with everybody, try and lighten things up a little bit, have some fun sports talk, but would be remiss if we didn't start. I know I, and I'm sure I speak for almost everybody here at the Score, just want to offer thoughts and prayers to everybody in the city of Aurora. Obviously, the families impacted by the horrible tragedy on Friday. Neighbors, friends, just a terrible, terrible situation. And I trust that they all know that we all are with them. And hopefully, I don't know how things can get better quickly, but that they can start feeling better about things as soon as possible.
Couldn't agree more. It's difficult to not have negative thoughts when tragedies like this strike. I think the important thing is to not get used to it, to not become accustomed to this as being the norm, because the numbers are certainly indicating that it's becoming more normal. And I think we should continue to be upset and outraged when it happens and continue to seek answers for how to stop it from happening.
Yeah, I almost never get political here because it never ends well. And, and I always manage to piss off both sides no matter what I do. Yeah. And we're not going to do that this morning. The issues that arise from this, we can talk about down the line. Right now, there are people that are, you know, just suffering horribly. And hopefully everybody's focus is on them and what we can do for them and how we can be there for them. So maybe we can take your minds off for a few hours this morning as we talk a little sports here. Got a good show lined up. Excited about it. Dan Pompey, regular here at the Score, obviously. One of our partners, one of my partners on the Bears pregame show here at the Score, is going to join us in about 15 minutes or so. We're going to talk about the pending NFL Combine, free agency getting ready to kick off. But even more than that, the big news of the past week, the Joe Flacco trade and the settlement of the collusion case between Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid and the NFL. We're also going to have Evan Altman stop by a little bit later. I know, Anthony, you saw an article that Evan put together. The Cubs are they're going to own their own TV, whether it's a good idea or not. You know? I can't escape the feeling. You know, you look at what's happened in Los Angeles, and I don't know if it's a disaster, but it ain't good. Mm-hmm. And they're going on, what, 6-7 years now. This just feels like something that the Cubs decided they had to do. And maybe it's going to work great. This is not my area of expertise. But as a fanatic Cubs fan, a season ticket holder who doesn't go to 81 games, obviously, and doesn't go on the road, I'm going to be really pissed if there's one that isn't on television. You know, and that's, yeah, that's the pending issue that they face here. So really anxious to talk to Evan and get his slant and see what's going on there as well.
And baseball, in the way it's structured, makes it more difficult for the Cubs with their own network to gain distribution and figure out how distribution makes sense for their own broadcast network, because baseball will only allow you to creep into the opposing team's markets to sort of the, you know, this very minute degrees of where the crossover can end up being there. So financially, if it works, it's obviously going to make great sense. But if it doesn't work financially, then they're just putting themselves in a bind. They're putting their fans in a bind for how they actually get to watch the games of their favorite team with this rich tradition that's been there of Cubs support.
You know, it's one of these things where you better be looking at the potential for collateral damage before you do something like this, because they're going to make money. I have no doubt about that. I mean, look at the Dodgers deal. I want to say it was $8.36 billion that they got from, I think it was Time Warner, some cable.
Time Warner, yeah.
And didn't realize until after they'd cashed the check that part of the problem was that they had ticked off every other carrier in California. And that, you know, cable outlets weren't going to carry their games. And now you also have to be careful because it's different. I mean, Los Angeles is not Chicago. And Dodgers fans, and I'm not knocking Dodgers fans. The ones that are real fans, I'm sure, are great fans. But it's just not the passion there that it is here. You know, and particularly if you could pick one franchise of the 30 in Major League Baseball that this is the most dangerous for, it is probably the Chicago Cubs, because they basically invented the superstation. I mean, you go back to why are there so many Cubs fans everywhere? Because in the 50s and 60s and 70s, people all over the country could watch the Cubs on WGN for free, by the way, or as part of their cable packages, cable came along. And so I know nothing about the economics of it. I don't pretend to, but I do know the danger is if they cannot get complete saturation of their games, if Cubs fans throughout Chicago, I mean, you know, around the country, there's going to be ways with satellite and you know, downloading and streaming and everything, people will find it. But if basically in your local market, you can't get every game on television, and I'm not saying they won't, but it's going to be interesting. So, again, anxious to learn more about it. And that's one of the reasons we invited Evan to come on.
And my experience in television has had me go through a couple of different versions of this. When the Big Ten Network first started out, and I was at BTN as a football analyst and games and studio, and the initial year-ish of the Big Ten Network, there's this big battle with Comcast going on because, you know, it wasn't the first conference network. It was certainly, at the time, the most financially successful conference network fairly quickly. But that first year, the Big Ten Network had a big battle going on with Comcast because there was carriage issues. They didn't have a deal done with Comcast. There was a lot of other subscribers and carriers of sports content that had, you know, gotten a deal done with BTN, but Comcast wanted a different subscriber fee and Big Ten didn't think it was right and this and that. So they went back and forth and it got very public. They were, you know, slinging barbs at each other in different media outlets. And the pressure that came from viewers, from Big Ten fans who weren't getting their team's games, who weren't able to watch whoever it was, Michigan football or Ohio State or Iowa, or, you know, whichever fan base got really ticked off, then at a certain point, Comcast started to suffer that ire. There were certainly some that was directed at the Big Ten as a conference as well, but the pressure came and a deal got done. Now, currently, I do a lot of college football for the Pac-12 network, and right now, their big battle goes on with DirecTV at this point, and so DirecTV is a really big television carrier out west, just like Comcast is a really big television carrier here in the Midwest. And so there's pressure that comes, but there's not the same level of fanaticism from Pac-12 fans. So while the pressure goes towards DirecTV, it's not to the level like the pressure went towards Comcast here in the Midwest. So right now, a deal still hasn't gotten done because if someone can't watch USC on DirecTV, as opposed to writing 100 angry emails or angry phone calls to DirecTV, they're going to go outside and surf. Mm-hmm. It's a bit of a different thing. So whoever gets more pressure from the viewer, from the consumer, tends to be where the momentum ends up swinging against their favor when folks are angry at the carrier or at the actual customer. You know, which side ends up getting more of the pressure. So we'll see it. If for some reason initially the Cubs aren't having every game carried in a manner where folks are able and available to watch it, who've been accustomed to watching any Cubs game they want to for decades upon decades now, then we'll see where that pressure goes. Is it going to go towards the organization because they're the ones who ran off and started their own network, or is there going to be a way that they can spin it and say, well, actually, it's your local so-and-so provider, this regional affiliate who we offered them some games, they didn't take it. We'll see where that discussion ends up trending if it ends up being the case.
This hour on The Score is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-KARS, the number 4, KIDS. I can tell you where the angst is going to go. I mean, that much I know. And again, not from everybody. It's like politics. You can't get everybody on the same side. But it's going to be aimed at the Cubs. The Cubs have not had a good year, shall we say.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm not talking about the product on the field. I think That's the punchline here, is that they won the most games in the National League. They had to play an extra 163 for the Brewers to get the extra win. They win the most games in the National League, and everybody's got them doomed, and they're going to be a 500 team. That's ridiculous. They're better than that. But I'm talking about the unfortunate situation with Addison Russell. I'm talking about the unfortunate situation with the owner of the team. And Tom Ricketts can put out all the statements he wants about his dad not being involved. His dad is the owner of the team. Right. Tom and his brothers and sister didn't break open their piggy banks and buy the Cubs. I mean, and so now you've got the owner of the Cubs is a racist jerk. I don't know any nice way to say it. It's interesting. We read these statements about how, well, this does not represent the culture or the beliefs of the Cubs and everything about the Cubs. I didn't hear anywhere where Joe Ricketts apologized for what he said.
Yeah.
Now, maybe he didn't. Maybe I missed it. But that is his beliefs. Mm-hmm. So, again, it just hasn't gone well recently for the Cubs. And now you've got this. And I think for sure what's going to happen, Anthony, again, if there's a problem, and I hope there isn't. I hope they're very smart people. They're obviously very good business people. Maybe they've anticipated all this. They're going to have all the answers. But if some of those games aren't getting broadcast and people get upset, the finger is going to point right back at the Cubs for being so greedy with this. Because here's, you talk about potential for collateral damage or trickle-down effect. The cable business is not a good business to be in right now. The Comcast affiliates, which are now NBC Sports, NBC Sports Chicago, I'm not saying they're not in trouble. I'm not saying their business is bad. But when you see when you see several tranches of layoffs over the last couple of years, you see what's happening at ESPN, at the Comcast Sports, or at the NBC Sports Networks, at the Fox Sports Networks. Bunch of them are for sale right now. The future of cable TV is in question right now. Now, maybe that's one of the reasons the Cubs are doing that, but you got the cord cutters and streaming and everything else. You're talking to one of the great technological boobs of all time. one of the disadvantages of being a senior member of our media is that I just, most of this wasn't available when I was in my heyday, and so I haven't really bothered to figure all of it out. Finally figured out how to get Netflix through Comcast. That was a big win for me. Actually, my son came over and did it for me. So I don't pretend to be able to predict the future, but I do know it's having a seriously negative impact on cable sports right now, and the Cubs fly into the teeth of this. So it's going to be a fascinating experiment to watch.
For a guy who married a Red Sox fan and a lady who grew up in the New England area, huge Patriots fan, Red Sox fan. And so this entire century for New England sports fans has been them just watching pretty much every team they care about winning, and in a lot of cases, multiple titles. So I put this warning out. I was on a Cowherd show like 2 years ago. It was sometime during the season after the Cubs World Series. And I warned Cubs fans, watch out, don't become too annoying, because pretty much everyone under the sun is fairly annoyed by New England sports fans at this point, who think regardless of how many championships their teams win, it's their birthright to continue doing this. And I already saw kind of the early signs that Cubs fans were maybe veering in that direction, where they're getting super chesty. So I think at this point, my prediction of kind of warning Cubs fans from getting annoyed, because there was that stretch where the Cubs became America's team, where, when they were on TV and things started going well in 2015, the numbers were big and the nation was hot with Cubs fever, and it was very fun to just kind of watch that start to mature. And then very quickly, they won the World Series, and then everyone in the country is sort of viewing the Cubs as this dynamo, and it looked like maybe it was going to last for a long time. Who knows? Maybe it will. There's going to be a big season in determining that. But now there's been a lot of self-inflicted wounds that I think go beyond just whether or not Cubs fans are becoming annoying, but now that the fan base itself has a lot of questions about whether or not they feel great about continuing to root for the organization by some of the transactions. And, even think of a situation like when they brought in Dan Murphy, and, a lot of folks will vouch for how great a person he is day in and day out, but he had comments out there that deeply offended a lot of people, and Aroldis Chapman. And this has gone back for a few years now, where there is some building momentum of folks feeling offended by various branches, player and executives, and transactions where they've either kept guys or brought guys in who swing against the feelings that folks have about a lot of issues, whether religious, whether sexual identity, whatever the case may be. And those are very, very deep feelings that people will hold about those issues. And so when we've seen it over and over again over the last couple of years, and there's certainly not, I wouldn't say, a building wave of sort of anti Cubism out there, but it's something the team needs to be very aware of. Now, they're starting their own network, predates, you know, some of these things. These are discussions that have been going on for years now, but it's certainly something that needs to be within the Cubs' consciousness for how they handle this with their fan base that does have more negative feelings about the organization now than they have in a few years.
I happen to have been hosting, trying to remember now, I don't think it was an afternoon shift. I was filling in for Lawrence. I was doing his show the night after the Chapman trade.
Okay.
And again, I mean, anybody who's ever heard me on the air knows I'm not probably, I'm more fanatic about the Cubs than the Bears. I mean, that's my job. I can't be a fan in the press box. I can with the Cubs. And I started out by saying, I don't care if we go another 108 years without a World Series. I don't want Aroldis Chapman on my team. I mean, this is a bad human being, you know, and it's not hard to find the evidence, you know. Yeah. And the good news, Anthony, was for the next 4 hours, I didn't have to give the phone number again. It's all night long. We had plenty of calls. And I would say, I mean, I was in the minority, but it was probably 60-40, you know, it wasn't 50-50. And you're right, you get all kinds of those things that come with it. I have a story, actually, about being careful about what you think you are because you win once. But we're going to take a quick break here because, as I promised, we've got Dan Pompey coming up next. So we're going to talk a little bit of NFL. Been a busy week in the news just when we thought it'd be quiet. And then we'll come back on the other side. We're going to talk a lot of baseball, some basketball, and hockey today as well. Anthony Herron is in. I'm Hub Arkush. We are with you until noon, and we are back in just a moment after this quick break on The Score.
There's a lot of guys that look at that and say, hey, listen, you know, XYZ has a job, you know, Colin doesn't have a job. Why is that? And I think there is, again, that goes back to the distrust issue. That goes back to a lot of these issues that, again, it's very paternalistic in the sense of, you know, we know better than you and all of this. And it's just, it reeks of, again, everything that's gone on over the last few years.
Anthony, there are certain producers we have around here that I can always count on for exactly the bumps in and out that I want musically. And Stud, we'll just call him Studs, okay?
Works for me.
He didn't go with it, but I'm going to go with it.
There you go.
Studs here. Adam Studzinski is our producer this morning. And whenever we're in, I love the music bumps. I find myself pausing to listen and forgetting we're supposed to go on here. Adam, a great job as always. That was the voice of Eric Winston, the president of the National Football League Players Association. He visited with Danny Parkins and Dan McNeil earlier this week. And I actually got a chance to visit with him briefly a couple weeks ago in Atlanta at the Super Bowl after the NFLPA press conference. Interesting guy, a true believer. There are many people with the NFLPA that I've had my issues with because I think they may not be there for the right reasons. And it's more some of the outside folks. I will never be a DeMaurice Smith fan, you know, and I could be wrong. He could be right. I don't know. But Winston's a sharp guy. And the short version of this is that short of a miracle, there's going to be a work stoppage of some kind following the 2020 season. And it was a really good interview. Adam, can they find that at the Score, at the website, if they want to hear the whole interview? I don't even know how that works.
Yeah, it's on the okay. website. Just go in and search in the podcast.
Yeah, go to 670score.com and search Eric Winston, because it was a really good interview and a lot of information. And we may get into that, but that's not the main reason that we invited our first guest on today, Dan Pompey. Good enough to take time out from his Sunday morning to join us. And Dan, welcome. An unusually newsy week in the NFL, the week after the Super Bowl. And mainly I just wanted to talk to you because we haven't talked in a while, but there's stuff we can talk about in the NFL too. So how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's good to be with you. And yes, it's been a while, so it's good to talk. I know we were both in Atlanta and never crossed paths the whole time, so that's always strange when that happens, but it's good to be with you on the phone anyway.
I believe you were trying to travel at the peak of the polar vortex, as I recall, and had an issue or two getting down there. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know, I was supposed to go down Wednesday morning, and the flight was canceled. And initially, they booked me later Wednesday and today. That flight got canceled. Then they bumped me to Thursday. That flight got canceled, and they said, oh, we can't get you out till Friday. So ended up on a Friday morning flight. It actually taxied out to the runway and then had to come back. Everyone had to deplane, got on another plane, ended up getting there Friday afternoon finally. But it was quite an adventure. But I guess given what we were dealing with in Chicago, you know, I can't complain too much because I know a lot of other people had much greater inconveniences and problems.
Well, I can tell you, as someone who was there from Sunday night to the following Monday, And the only reason I was is I had a Monday morning flight. And I don't know if you recall, but the Monday before we had 4 inches of snow. And they canceled my 7 o'clock flight in the morning. So I said, I'm going Sunday night. I'm not taking a chance on this. At any rate, great to have you here. We can talk about the Super Bowl in a few minutes if we want. It's a little bit in our rearview mirror. But I don't know if we can say enough about how incredible the Patriots organization is, regardless, Anthony, of what people want to say about Patriots fans. Yeah. That's a different story, or New England fans, I should say. But, Dan, really interesting week. And the first big news breaking was the Joe Flacco trade. But I'm going to put that second because I think the story with bigger implications, which we just heard, I think it was Thursday, is this settlement between the National Football League and, of course, Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid. And I'm not sure that the everyday fan has completely grasped how stunning this really is, because the NFL doesn't settle. They bury. They crush. They destroy. Yeah. And I did not see this one coming. I started to hear rumblings, the last 24, 48 hours before it came out, but never expected it to go this way. I'm curious what your take is on it.
Well, I think the NFL feared that if it went the distance that, it would end up being a potential black eye if it got to the point where it was out of their control. And, they felt like this was the best route for them. I mean, to me it looks like both sides kind of lost, but that's when you settle, sometimes you have to grasp that reality that both sides do. Neither are getting exactly what they wanted to, but I think it's probably the best that could have happened for everyone as well. So I think it's good that the NFL is putting it in its rearview mirror, hopefully, and I think it's good that Kaepernick's putting it in his rearview mirror. And I know his agent is even saying that he does still want to play, so maybe something happens. I don't know.
As some of the rumors out there about the teams that may be interested in Colin Kaepernick, New England Patriots being one of those teams. That would certainly be newsworthy if the Patriots signed Colin Kaepernick. And Dan, the discovery process was one thing that I was going to be really interested in seeing how that part played out, because obviously, when you're dealing with as many billionaires as there are in the National Football League, then there's certainly going to be things. There's information that's in files and emails that they're not going to want out there. You don't become a billionaire without having some unflattering things available on you from an information standpoint. Do you feel like that's where probably the main pressure came from as far as the NFL side of the case went and why they were willing to settle?
Well, certainly that's a part of it. But the other thing is, what if they lose and there was collusion proof? Now you've really got a can of worms that could affect a lot of things beyond just this case. And I think the NFL thought it was worth it just to pay the players to make the problem go away.
Dan, it's interesting to me. And of course, there's a gag order on this on both sides. And I don't think that either side necessarily wants this information out. So everything leaks eventually, but we don't know, how long it's going to be before we get some details. The assumption is that Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid got a lot of money because there'd be no other reason to settle. And the assumption on the NFL side is exactly what you just said. They'd reached the point where there was no win for them. There was nothing they could get. They could let this thing drag out for another year or two, end up in court, and even if collusion was not proved, that wasn't a win. What intrigues me is if Colin Kaepernick does get signed in the next couple of months, if he plays football this year, isn't that an admission of collusion? I mean, doesn't that mean, okay, we settled it, now all of a sudden he's got contract offers? So to me, that's going to be the next interesting piece of this story.
Yeah, it could be. There's so much speculation at this point, as you alluded to, though. We really don't know what is included in the settlement. And, there's some speculation that there's a permanent separation clause in the agreement. So we really don't know where it's going to go. And like you say, it'll be interesting to see if some more of the facts come out over time and we see where Kaepernick ends up and where the NFL ends up. The other interesting thing, too, is the new league apparently offered Kaepernick a contract. And there were reports that said that he would only play for them for $20 million. So maybe he thinks that he's worth that. Maybe he thinks he's got a deal with the NFL in place somewhere. I don't know. You know, if he really wanted to play and wasn't interested in just the money, maybe he would have gone to that league. I don't know.
And then, of course, there are conflicting reports that are starting to come out whether or not it was $20 million that he was looking for from the Alliance of American Football. And then I would also add the point that it's his value to that league would certainly be different than his value to the National Football League. But to me, whatever the number is, that would likely be part of what the factor is in what he thinks his value would be in playing in what's obviously a lower level of football. But his market in the National Football League, Dan, he hasn't played since 2016. So I don't know. At this point, there's certainly not going to be a way to completely separate, you know, the cause that Colin Kaepernick has been about from whether or not he would end up being added to a roster and the fervor that would ensue beyond that. But just simply as a player, he's certainly one of, let's call it, at least the 64 best quarterbacks that could play football. He could certainly be a backup for someone, but where, from your understanding, would be the value of Colin Kaepernick, the quarterback, at this point?
Well, I think it's pretty low. You know, he's a guy who has been out of the league and really hasn't played above average football since 2013. So, yeah, you look at him as a backup, but you look at him as kind of a specialty backup, too, who, you know, might not fit every system. You might have to amend your system a little bit for him. And then, you know, the thing is, NFL teams, the ostensible reason for this whole thing to begin with is NFL teams didn't want to deal with, you know, the drama, right, of bringing in Colin Kaepernick. Well, that part still hasn't changed. So that might be something that detracts from his value in the opinion of NFL teams. So it continues to, I should say. So that's going to be interesting if somebody changes on him and says, okay, now that this settlement is done, you know, we find that he does have value to us, even though maybe he didn't before.
The bottom of the hour was brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves have been providing affordable winning hockey for 25 years. Celebrate today at 3 as the Wolves host the Iowa Wild at Allstate Arena. Enjoy free parking, courtesy of Kia, and discounted concession items. Visit ChicagoWolves.com.
You know, it's interesting, guys. The natural reaction I have found of fans when they hear Colin Kaepernick wanted $20 million in the AF, oh, spoiled rich kid, you know, it doesn't work. Blah, blah. I go completely the other way. Here's my point. I watched the fourth quarter of the San Diego and San Antonio game last weekend. Not last night, but last weekend. It was opening weekend. I was curious. I wanted to see it. And I was impressed. I thought, that's pretty good football. And then I forgot to turn it back on yesterday until somebody just said AAF. Colin Kaepernick is worth more than $20 million to the AAF. I mean, you know, Dan, what he would bring in name recognition and value and people talking about it constantly, I don't blame him at all for asking for $20 million.
Yeah, well, he would bring something to that league, obviously, because he'd make a lot of people tune in who aren't tuning in now, and he would give some credibility to it. You know, not unlike how some of the big stars went to the AFL back in the day, or the USFL, and made those leagues legitimate. So yeah, I get that part, but obviously, I don't think this league is set up to absorb that kind of a contract. But I guess you could always change when you think something has got a certain value to you, and maybe. You know, maybe there's somebody out there that thinks that Kaepernick can bring that kind of value to an AAF team.
Eric Reed, who was certainly the closest cohort to Colin Kaepernick throughout this entire process, and he was a part of that collusion case against the NFL as well. One of the things I didn't quite grasp about it is it seemed then, and I didn't even realize it, that their cases were tied together. They were, you know, going along parallel lines. They were settled together at the same time. But with Eric Reed being able to, you know, he re-signs a 3-year, $22 million contract with the Carolina Panthers. So how does the Eric Reed situation or circumstance, how does that affect the collusion claim that was there against the NFL, you know, for him as a guy who was able to not only initially sign a contract, but then sign another lucrative deal beyond that?
Yes, it's a great question, and I wish I had an answer for it, because you would think that would have weakened the case, right, for Reed and Kaepernick, since they were in it together. but it apparently did not. Of course, it may have, though. Maybe they would have gotten more money if Reed had not signed with the Panthers last year and signed that contract extension. So it's hard to say. But then again, you know, from Reed's standpoint, his case obviously is that, you know, he was, unlike Kaepernick, this guy was a pretty good starter in the league last, what was it, 2017 season, and came up into free agency and got no interest to speak of until the Panthers signed him. I think, when did they sign him, September or October? I forget when it was.
Early October, I believe, yeah.
It was October, yeah. So, you know, he's got that case that, well, a good player was sitting around the streets, and what was the reason for it? So, obviously, that's his argument, but it's hard to say what kind of impact that had on the settlement.
I mean, my guess is, and we had dinner. One of my best friends is also our attorney, and I was talking to him about this last night, or at least we discussed it briefly. Most likely the financial component is some negotiated estimate of what they've lost in income. And so the bottom line is Reed, you know, was out of the league for what, basically a half a season. So you get that plus something damages that you agree on. In the case of Kaepernick, he's missed 2 years. The average for a starting quarterback is about 18 or 19 million bucks. He may miss more time. There's been tremendous, I don't want to say damage to his reputation. I mean, you can call it what you want, but every estimate I've seen is that Colin Kaepernick probably is getting somewhere between 50 and 100 million bucks. And that's just talking to lawyers about this. Now, he may have gotten 10 cents. I don't know. You know, we're all speculating, but that's kind of the way I think folks approach this.
Wow. That's something. If he's getting that much money, and I mean, the other thing is, how do you determine that he would have been a starter these last couple of years? I mean, that's a clearly subjective deal. That, you know, some people might say, you know, he wouldn't have been in the league if he had been on a team. He might have been cut, or if he would have, you know, he would have been a second or third stringer at best. Or, I mean, the team that had him, the 49ers, were ready to cut him. John Lynch said that. And, you know, that I think to say that he would have been a starter these last 2 years, I think is a stretch to me.
Well, you know, Dan, I don't disagree, but he was a starter when he voided his contract and had been for 4 or 5 years. I was talking to lawyers about this, and they were explaining the way that this might be approached. Each one is individual. We don't know what either side's motives for settling this were. In the case of the NFL, they clearly wanted it to go away. And I read an interesting take on, I want to say, I think it was Dan Wetzel from Yahoo had a column that I thought was really interesting, because he pointed out that the other way to look at this is that even if the NFL was wrong, for the last year and a half, we haven't been talking about the national anthem thing anymore. Mm-hmm. That was what the league wanted to go away. If they gave him $64 million, that's $2 million a team, and it was more than worth $2 million to each of these guys to get rid of all that negative publicity. So I think the theme of today's show is going to be collateral damage, the tangential information. There's all this other stuff on the side that has nothing to do, you know, with football or who was right or who was wrong, but these are the reasons you settle these things.
And mind you, Eric Reed was still kneeling in 2018. Mm-hmm. You know, that part continued. The individual performance of his protest was still going on. It wasn't out there. It wasn't forefront in the news for the National Football League, though.
But nobody was talking about it because Kaepernick was the face of it.
Uh-huh.
And that's why Kaepernick would get so much more money to settle this to make it go away.
Well, here's a question for you, too. Does anybody think that part of the settlement might be that Reed stops kneeling?
Huh. I hadn't thought about that aspect of it. I would be surprised, but, you know, I mean, if they're negotiating right now how to handle, and, you know, that sort of went away a bit at the start of the season when both sides, the players' union and the league itself, decided they were going to sort of step back from it and have a more collaborative discussion about how to handle the anthem and where players are situated within it. So I suppose it's possible that Eric Reed could have done it. I would be surprised if he did that.
It's a great question, though, Dan, because we got to point out that 180 degrees with these two guys. Eric Reed got a 3-year, $22 million extension at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, NFL contracts, it's only what the guaranteed money is. But the guaranteed money, as I recall, was about $12 or $13 million in that. So, you know, in his case, he already had a contract in his pocket. He may have decided this is the price of me not. Because let's not forget that there are some really great quality people in the NFL, like Malcolm Jenkins in Philadelphia. I don't know him personally, but I admire the work that he's done.
And he and Eric Reed are at odds.
Yes, they are. But that's not even where I was going. My point would be there are other ways to state your case. And they may have simply, between Reed and his lawyers and the NFL's lawyers, come to the agreement that, okay, I'm going to settle this. I'm going to take your money, and then I'm going to, you know, deal with my issues elsewhere.
Well, the interesting thing, too, is yet Reed and Jenkins, as Anthony and Hal both alluded to, got into an argument at the Panthers-Eagles game this year about this whole circumstance. That Reed took issue with Jenkins accepting money for the NFL for causes that promote social justice. And he didn't like that. So maybe Reed would not take a settlement to stop kneeling. I don't know. You don't know where his head is at on this, and we don't know what was possible and not possible between the two sides in negotiations.
Well, and Dan, we can call it by another name, but what it was Jenkins made a settlement, and that's what Reed was pissed about. So, you know, one of these days we'll know more. At least for now, it's been settled. The next big story will be whether Kaepernick plays or not. I know we got to let you go, Dan, but we didn't even get to the other big story of the week, and I want to get your take on it. Joe Flacco can't be completed until March 13th when the new league year begins, but he's going to be a Denver Bronco. It's going to be about a $10.5 million cap savings for the Baltimore Ravens, plus it clears the way for Lamar Jackson. It's not going to have a huge cap impact on the Denver Broncos because they're going to have to release Case Keenum when the trade is made, and they're only obligated to 1 year on Flacco's deal. So it's going to cost them a little bit against the cap, but not much more than they were paying Keenum. Your take on this deal?
Yeah, I think John Elway's stepping out there a little bit, clearly. I would be surprised if they don't make another move for a young quarterback, you know, try to draft a guy again. You know, but Flacco is a little like Kaepernick was when he was let go by the 49ers, in that, you know, really hasn't played good football in a number of years and now has been replaced, obviously, by a young, dynamic quarterback in Lamar Jackson. And, you know, they're hoping and gambling, obviously, that Flacco can regain form and become the quarterback that he was. Probably the last time he played really well, I think, what was about 2014, maybe. So, you know, it's a step out there, without a doubt. And you wonder if he's even an upgrade from Case Keenum, because Keenum obviously had that fantastic season 2 years ago with the Vikings. You know, to make this move early and to say, you know, no, we're not going to be interested in Nick Foles or whomever else might shake loose from the tree. It's a bold move, and it's you wonder if how many of these quarterback moves Elway's got left before someone finally says, "Look, you know, I know you're a Hall of Fame quarterback, and you did a lot of good for the organization, but we can't keep doing these things."
And before we let you go, Dan, as we kind of discuss one quarterback who's getting long in the tooth and his best days may be behind him, and Joe Flacco. Curious, I haven't heard your impressions of Kyler Murray up to this point with the combine on the way and what your anticipation is, you know, now that he has made his declaration that he's devoted to football and he didn't even mention baseball in the press release that he put out. And for a guy like this who's, you know, beyond diminutive in stature for a professional quarterback, what maybe excites you about him and what do you anticipate seeing in Indianapolis?
I love any football player I could look in the eye to eye. So I'm going to be a Murray fan. I'm fascinated by the young man. You know, I think I'm really excited to watch him play in the National Football League. I don't know if he's going to be able to do it or not. I have no idea. I know that we've seen a lot of mold breakers in recent years. And, you know, there's a chance he can be a mold breaker too. I mean, not everyone can be one, but, you know, they said Russell Wilson couldn't do it. They said Lamar Jackson couldn't do it. There's been a lot of guys who didn't fit the traditional prototype of quarterbacks who've come along and made impacts. You know, the thing is you worry about with a guy that small, obviously, is not just his ability to make plays down in, down out, but his ability to do it year in, year out and hold up and take those hits and take those beatings. And that's obviously the big thing that no one can answer right now until he gets out there and starts doing it. But he's fascinating, and I'm really looking forward to watching him throughout the draft process and beyond once he gets with an NFL team.
Dan, we're going to let you go, but you just rang a button with me just now, or pushed a button, and just so real quick, your take. I still don't believe Lamar Jackson can do it, and that's what fascinates me about the Flacco trade. I think the kid has got a place in the NFL. I think he's a great athlete, but you saw what happened when Anthony Lynn and Gus Bradley got a second look at him. He showed me nothing. He did a great job getting them to the playoffs, but watching him try and throw the football and run an NFL passing game, I haven't seen it yet. Now, you know, maybe I'm wrong. He's certainly got the skills for it, and we give all these young quarterbacks a chance. So I'm not writing them off, but I don't get the commitment to Lamar Jackson based on the sample size that we have so far.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying completely, and I think two things are going to have to happen for him to be a consistent NFL quarterback over time. First is the offense is going to have to change completely, which Greg Roman has intent on doing. The Ravens knew quarterback or new offensive coordinator. And the other thing is he's going to have to develop and become a better passer and kind of open up elements of his game that haven't been there. You know, if all he's going to do is sit there and run around with the football, I don't think that's going to work. But again, you know, the game is evolving and things are changing. So I think it's a fascinating experiment.
Dan, we really appreciate the time. Hopefully you will enjoy this snowy Sunday. We'll get the shoveling done. You can enjoy the rest. And we will talk to you again real soon. Thanks for taking time out.
Okay. Thank you for having me, guys. Enjoy it.
It's Dan Pompey. You can, of course, find the Hall of Famer on Twitter at Dan Pompey. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic. I'm sure Hub's already got his tickets. Visit Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic in Schaumburg, February 22nd through the 24th. The nation's largest upland hunting and conservation expo focuses on bird dogs, wild game, and cooking and hunting heritage. With over 400 vendors and great seminars, Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic has something for you. Visit pheasantfest.org.
I only shoot at animals if somebody gives them a gun so they can shoot back at me. Otherwise, it seems very unfair.
How about a machete?
Yeah.
You know, take a machete into the wild and just get after some quail, maybe?
I trying not to piss people off, I find a way. I'm not anti-hunting as long as you eat it. You know, if you're going to eat what you kill, go for it. I don't like guns. They scare the hell out of me. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, your calls at 312-644-6767. You've got the score. Hey, everybody, I'm Hub Arkush. She's Anthony Herron. We are in with you until noon today. Hopefully, maybe you're sitting by the fireplace with a cup of coffee. You're done shoveling the snow. I don't know what it's like in your area. I guess it's different around the city. Not too bad down here in the Loop. I know out north by us in Deerfield, there was quite a bit of snow on the ground when I left at about 7:30 this morning. So be careful out there. Sit back. Listen to your radio. We're going to talk sports with you for the next couple hours. Interesting conversation with Dan Pompeius. Now, you know, Anthony, I mean, Lamar Jackson, he fascinates me. There's absolutely a place in the NFL for him. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've been preaching for 40 years. You do not judge a draft or players when they are drafted for at least 2, maybe 3 years. And at quarterback, you give them even a little more room. So I'm not saying he's not going to be great.
Yeah.
I'm saying we had an 8-game sample, and he does not throw the football like an NFL quarterback. You know, and there were times when he wasn't pressured. It was wide open, and he still couldn't, you know, hit the ocean from the beach. I mean, so we'll see. You know, but there's a ton of work to do there. Now, that said, I look at what you mentioned, the Patriots and Kaepernick. What Bill Belichick could do with Kaepernick or Lamar Jackson or what Sean Payton did with Taysom Hill. I mean, you know, the league is evolving, and for all I know, Lamar Jackson could be an MVP in the next couple of years. I just don't think it's going to be as a traditional quarterback.
And I wonder with the Taysom Hill situation in New Orleans and how that manifests itself to a long career as a quarterback, because he's a kind of a special teamer, trick guy. But at a certain point, Drew Brees in his 40s will retire. So then is it they find a way to keep Teddy Bridgewater around and he's the incumbent, or is it, you know, I mean, Taysom Hill doesn't, I haven't seen enough to think he's going to be the future at quarterback, but they find cool, clever ways to utilize him. Right now, Lamar Jackson, the Ravens have basically said he's our future at quarterback. Mm-hmm. So that's a different situation than, you know, that the two players are in. And I think, you know, comparatively, like a Colin Kaepernick, he has had much higher level success in the NFL than any of these other guys we're talking, you know, not Joe Flacco, but the other guys who are, you know, sort of unproven starters in the NFL that we're talking about right now in this discussion. And Kaepernick has had games where he's passed for 400 yards. And, you know, a lot of those yards didn't necessarily come from within the pocket and the way the defenses were structured around that. Like, I think it was, who was it, against Green Bay, I think he threw for over 400 the year after they went to the Super Bowl, and Jim Harbaugh was still the coach at that point. And there are some things he's certainly proven from within the pocket. Now, you know, like folks on the text line say, well, maybe he's just, Kaepernick's just been out of football because he's no damn good. No, that's not why. Because there's a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL that don't seem to be any damn good. That's certainly not the only reason he's not in the league right now. I mean, you know, can run down the litany of lists of guys who have started games in the National Football League, and even to the point that you know, one of the points that Dan Pompey was making about whether or not Kaepernick would have been a starter. It's a lot of really bad quarterbacks who started games in the NFL since Colin Kaepernick has played in the league. So even if he wasn't sort of, you know, put on a pedestal as someone's opening day starter, if someone brought him in as a backup, he would have likely eventually gotten into a game, because the franchises that aren't sort of at the top of the podium, the top of the heap in the NFL, tend to run through multiple quarterbacks throughout the year. Even the great franchises at points with the injuries at the position run through multiple quarterbacks throughout the year. So from a Kaepernick standpoint, that's certainly part of the case that his legal team would have made in those proceedings as well.
If I hear one more moron either call us or the text line lighting up with Colin Kaepernick had the worst game by a quarterback in NFL history against the Bears in 2016. You remember the conditions on that particular day? Do you remember the defense he was playing against? And most importantly, do you remember that the only reason the 2-14 49ers weren't the worst team in football was because the Cleveland Browns existed? In that final season, he threw 19 touchdowns and 4 interceptions, had a 90.7 quarterback rating for the worst team in the league.
Yeah.
He is a good quarterback. Mm. He took the 49ers to 3 straight NFC title games, and a lot of it was the defense, but he was the best offensive player on that team. And now he's been out of the game for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. He wasn't playing as well towards the end. I'm not saying he's going to the Pro Bowl,
yeah,
but the idea he shouldn't have a job. Anyway, I did that on purpose. It was a segue, because our buddy Todd, who is the world's last surviving Browns fanatic. No, actually, they're coming back, and Todd is on the phone. And Todd, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, how strange is it for me to call you in the middle of February and not talk about a top 4 pick? So it's a different topic for a change. But the two questions I had real quick is, and I want to know if you agree, the biggest needs for the Browns right now are an outside corner tackle, offensive tackle, and inside linebacker, and just scope it through the free agent list. Doesn't seem to be positions of strength this year, and I was just curious to see, you know, if you had any thoughts or ideas where they might go in free agency. And then the other question, and maybe Anthony, you can answer this for me. I'm very curious to hear what you guys think. How do you think they're going to use a very crowded but talented backfield with Kareem Hunt, Duke Johnson, and then, of course, Nick Chubb? All 3 different running backs, and I know it's a nice problem to have, but I just was curious to see how you think they'll do that. But a great show as always. Love talking football, and thanks for taking my call.
All right, Todd, here's what we're going to do. Thank you for your call. I need you to hold on for about 3 or 4 minutes, because we're going to need to break here. We've got to hit certain things at the top of the hour. But when we come back, before we get to our guest, we will answer your questions, and I know exactly where you're going with it. I will say before we break, there's a lot I have to say about the signing of Kareem Hunt, but the greatest mystery of all is with Nick Chubb. I mean, a lot of people are excited about Nick Chubb.
Yeah.
Apparently John Dorsey is. So we'll talk about that in just a minute here at The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.